You're listening to the Girls on the Big Blue Couch Show
with Mandy B. Anderson and Rachel Chumley.
Girls on the Big Blue Couch. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to the Girls on the Big Blue Couch Show. This is episode 52. And I got to tell you, this isn't really like one of the most exciting topics we've ever done, but it's one of the most important.
True.
And it's one that we've been getting asked about doing. Mm-hmm. Because today we're going to be talking about how to help a friend who is grieving infant loss, miscarriage, and stillborn or stillbirth. Mm-hmm. And so we have a couple stories to share with this. We have Joette with us again. Welcome back, Joette.
It's great to be back.
And she's going to share her story a little bit about the loss of a child that she had over 3 decades ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to share a little bit of my story of going through a miscarriage. And Rachel is going to pop in with questions.
Yeah, I'm going to mostly just facilitate the conversation because it used to be like, oh gosh, I shouldn't be talking about it since I have 3 healthy children. And one of the things we're going to touch on today is what not to do, what to say, and how mm-hmm. to really support your friends when it's like that, when maybe you do have a friend in your life or a family member who is trying to get pregnant and it's not working mm-hmm. and you maybe have healthy children in your home, and how to overcome that obstacle.
Yeah.
With them.
And so it's going to be a monumental episode, I think.
I think so.
That
too.
A lot of people are going to relate to and maybe come back to again and again when they're going through mm-hmm. these type of situations.
Yep. So if we want to bring it in okay. with the story of Matthew.
All right.
And what happened
and what that was like. Okay. As Mandy alluded about going on 35 years ago, I was pregnant with our first baby, and we were very excited, as you can imagine. Had gone through a full 9-month pregnancy. There weren't any indications that there were any problems at the time, but the doctor seemed to think I was due 3 weeks sooner than I thought I was, and so he had me have an ultrasound. And back then, I'm not sure how technical they were as they are today, but we had the ultrasound about 4 days before Matthew was born. And at the time, there was nothing that they saw on the ultrasound to indicate there were problems. So on Thursday night, and this part is going to sound like a total fabrication of a story, but it is true, true, true. So Thursday middle or early in the morning, my water broke and we took off to the hospital. And I did not have that baby until Saturday at about 10:30. It was almost 52 hours of labor. And it was a grueling experience for both of us. It was unreal, but it's how it was. And he was, when he was...
That was natural.
That was natural. Yep. I didn't have any drugs of any kind. Because at that time, if you did have something, it would knock you out.
Ooh.
And you were pretty well not involved. You were not very lucid or anything. And I did not want that. And we'd gone through Lamaze. And that was the thing to do, was take it without it, anything. And so after all that work, and I was really exhausted, and the baby was born, and I looked up at my husband's face, and he was just crying, just sobbing. And I remember thinking, what's wrong? And then I looked, and they put the baby up on my belly. And I noticed, the thing that I noticed was at the bottom of his feet and the inside of his hands and the inside of his mouth were black, blue black. Mm. And then he peed. And I thought that was so cute. And I remember everybody was just kind of quiet. I wasn't quite sure what was going on. And we were taken off, of course, you know, to do the things that they do to the mom. And you couldn't hear him crying or anything, but then there was this little whimper. And I thought, oh, that was so sweet. Well, later on, they came and told us that he had a lot of problems. They weren't sure exactly what, but that his lungs weren't developed. And he actually was taken off to Bismarck within an hour with a neonatal ambulance that came down and got him. He ended up having a diaphragmatic hernia. So it was a hole between the diaphragm and the stomach or the bottom. And he ended up having the spleen, liver, and small intestine all developed up in the chest cavity. The heart was flipped and on the right, and the lungs were not developed at all. Mm-hmm. So he actually went into cardiac arrest in Hazen at the hospital there before the ambulance even got there. But they took him on to Bismarck, and they did surgery to put everything back. And we were exhausted by that time, so my mom insisted that my husband come and stay with them that night because we were so tired and everybody was emotional. But I was alone at the hospital.
You were in Hazen, right?
I was in Hazen. The baby was in Bismarck. Yep. And which is a regret. I mean, I don't know how that could have been different, but it was a regret that I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But before they brought him, before they took him on to Bismarck, they brought him into the room that I was in. And it just happened that my parents, my mom had stopped in at some point that morning to see how things were going. And so when she was there at delivery and when they knew there was something wrong, and she called my dad and he was able to come right over. And so the four of us were able to actually see him. And he was in a little incubator thing. And everybody got to touch him a little bit. And when I reached in my hand, he just spazzed. I mean, he just flinched. And I was like, oh, what did I do? And the doctor said, oh, he knows that's mama. Hmm. And I remember being just, oh, you know, that was so great. Mm-hmm. And I knew in my heart when they took him, he was going to be fine. We were a good Christian couple and we didn't do anything wrong. And it was just, you know, a little bump, nothing big. And so off they went. And like I said, I was all alone that night. And 3 o'clock in the morning, the nurse comes in and says the doctor in Bismarck wants to talk to you. And so the doctor said that he had died. And I remember thinking, no, this isn't, that's mm-hmm. not right. But I also knew I have to call my husband. I have to tell him. And so I called over to my parents, and then I was one that told my dad, and they came over then shortly thereafter. So we were very young, just married a little over a year, and here we're having to go through a funeral. Mm-hmm. And I was just very adamant. I had brought a blanket and a little outfit to take him home in, and because I had to stay probably longer than most new moms just because, you know, they were worried about me and stuff. And so my dad and my husband had to take care of all the funeral arrangements. And it was hard because they'd come to see me and I'd say, well, did they ask about something for him to wear or did they? And they never said, you know, they didn't ask for anything. So finally, at one point, I gave it the blanket and the outfit and said, take this to the funeral home. Because all I could think of was my baby was naked in that casket mm-hmm. and he needed to be warm. He needed to be cuddled in the blanket. So we have a little graveside service, and that also wasn't handled properly because we were asked when we wanted to have the funeral, and we just picked a day that following week. And what we weren't told was that there was a prominent Native American from a town nearby that had died, and there was a big funeral that same day in that town, and it was a ways, you know, about an hour away. And so the mortician gave our service to his new assistant, and bless his heart, you know, the young guy didn't have a clue what to do.
Being your first service,
mm-hmm. yeah,
an infant death,
and right, and so he didn't know, and I just. It bothered me because we were never asked to come and identify him. We were never told we could come and see him.
Because you never saw him once
he left Hazen. We never saw him. Once he left Hazen, I never saw that baby again. Just a mm-hmm. box at the graveside. And it bothered me for a very, very long time. And we had friends that before that had lost a 16-year-old daughter to a car accident. And so we were sitting with them. They were very helpful with us and just, you know, always ready to talk with us. And I was saying, again, and this is probably 4 months down the road, saying again how I wished somebody could have seen him. I wished we could have seen him. And finally, she turned to me and she said, I don't understand why you couldn't. Because she said when her daughter died, the mortician was very adamant that they have the chance to see her, even though it was an awful car accident, and she just wasn't their pretty daughter anymore. And he told them they couldn't even have an open casket. And he told them, you're going to regret this. You need the closure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might want to a week from now, 2 weeks, 10 years, and you're not. This is your only opportunity. And she said, I don't understand why he didn't let you see Matthew. Well, that's when my husband said, well, it kind of wasn't up to him. He wasn't the one. He said it was the other, the assistant, who told us they really didn't have time to get Matthew ready for us. And so for the next, I think it took me 16 months to get pregnant and to have Rachel. And until I was holding Rachel in my arms, that I had nightmares that that somebody would knock on the door and I'd open up the door and it was somebody holding a baby that would be his age. Mm-hmm. And they had had a mistake at the hospital and it wasn't our baby that died. So, like I said, it took a long time. What felt like it didn't really take a long time to get pregnant, but it felt like it took forever to get pregnant. And I cried every month and I just kept thinking, what if we can't have any more? What if that's it? Mm-hmm. And so you don't get over it. You don't get mm-hmm. past that, you know, and to know that we could have had our goodbyes differently with him mm-hmm. is something that I'm very adamant about helping a young family get past
right.
that.
Mm-hmm. So there's not a whole lot to say after a story no. like that. So no. I think at this point that we just kind of asked Mandy mm-hmm. to share what she's comfortable with sharing about her miscarriage and the experiences that you had.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nate and I have been married for almost 13 years, I think, this August. And we knew right away that we didn't want kids. That just wasn't something that, well, first of all, we didn't know how to relate to children. And so Rachel is the first friend I've ever had who made me stay in her life with kids. And
I adopted her as Auntie Mandy.
Yes.
And she was staying around.
And because of that, like, I really feel like part of the family. And so I love your kids as if they really were my nieces and nephews. But we didn't really know how to be around kids that were little. And we didn't really have this desire to be parents. And so we had made a decision several years ago to, you know, snip, snip.
Right.
And not have that ability to have kids. And some people automatically assume that it has everything to do with cystic fibrosis and the fact that I was born with that. That really was not why we made our decision. It was more because we didn't know how to handle kids and we just didn't think that we were cut out to be parents. And the thing is, Nate had a surgery, but he never went in to get checked to make sure that everything went through with the surgery. And so November of 2011 hit, and I find myself pregnant, which is so interesting because what really happened was I had a chemical pregnancy, which is before it's even fully attached, you begin to lose it.
Right.
And the thing that stood out to me was how much, as soon as we realized this was what was happening, that I was pregnant, before we realized it was a chemical pregnancy, because it was one of those things where with a chemical pregnancy, the home pregnancy test that you take can be a little bit inconclusive, where it's like, is this a full yes? Is it a full no? It's very faint
right.
on the line. And so the thing that was so weird about it was I was having all of these symptoms of pregnancy that you probably shouldn't have until, what, 8 weeks?
Right.
And, I mean, I had never felt anything like that before. And it came on strong. And as soon as we realized, okay, this is what's happening, the thing that stood out to me was how strong your mommy skills pop in.
Your instincts.
Your instincts pop in. And it was just like, oh my gosh, like I didn't plan for this, but I'm going to love this baby. And there are some people that I tell this story to and they think I'm nuts, but that's okay. Both Nate and I felt like it was a girl, that it would have been a girl. And the reason we feel that way is because we had never agreed on names for kids, ever. Like, if we would hypothetically, like, well, if we change our minds or if we decide to adopt, like, what would we choose for a name? And we would never agree. And before I started to lose the baby, I had come up with the name Ava and how I thought, oh, I just love this name if it's a girl. And I had to go pick up Nate one day from work. And as we were driving home, he said, I was thinking the other day that if it's a girl, we should name her Ava. And so that to me is like, it is kind of like the proof that was her name and that's who she is. And I strongly believe that she is in heaven. And if you've never read the book, Heaven is for Real, you must pick it up because I think that is a monumental book for every mom who's ever lost a baby and never got to meet them or lost them right after birth. And it just talks about how this little boy meets his sister that he shouldn't have known even was a possibility. And so just go get that book. Heaven is for real. And the thing that really points out to me, though, or stands out to me about my story is that, you know, this has been going on 4 years ago now. And Nate and I don't really feel a calling to be parents. I mean, if that were to change, we would definitely embrace that again. But we don't feel like it's our calling. However, it's definitely made me take a step back and realize how we treat women who go through miscarriages.
Absolutely.
Because it's so hard. I mean, that was happening during the time that I was going through some health issues with CF. I was going through PTSD from the fire and not dealing with any of that, plus not really dealing with my feelings about the miscarriage. And then, Rachel, you ended up getting pregnant like a couple weeks later with your youngest. And so it was just a really difficult time. And I stuffed all of those emotions down. I remember Madison had her daughter at that time.
They just had Mason.
They just had Mason. And I remember sitting, I think she had Mason about a week and a half to 2 weeks after I had the miscarriage. And I remember sitting in the hospital and I'm sure Maddie was awake, but she was pretending to be asleep.
She did pretend.
And I was holding Mason, and I just cried. And I am not the type of person to hold a baby and cry. Like, that has never been me. And now it's there's a couple times a year, usually around what my due date might have been, and Mother's Day. Those are very hard times during the year for me.
Absolutely.
And I think we don't understand that when we've never gone through it. And I think for whatever reason, we tend to put this pressure on women who have had miscarriages that they need to hurry up and get over it. And there is no length of time for grieving. And it surprised me how strong those emotions are, even now, years later, how those few times a year, those emotions are still strong. And if I don't give myself the time to grieve it, because I have to every year, I just have to cry a little and grieve it. And if I don't allow myself, it just builds up.
It does.
And I think that was an eye-opening experience for me because I didn't have a lot of compassion for those type of situations before because I'd never gone through it. And I didn't know what it was like to want to be a mom and to yearn for it and not have it happen. I dealt more with feelings of, okay, well, I never wanted this baby in the first place. Like, I didn't plan for this baby, so am I being punished because I didn't want one? And so I had to deal with feelings of guilt from the opposite end of that. Whereas a lot of other people feel like, well, I don't really know. I'm not going to put words in their mouth, but they go through other feelings when they're trying and trying to have a baby and it doesn't happen. So it was just, it was hard. And someday I'm going to write a book about the process of going through grieving for a child, but you have to make it a process. You have to do something symbolic. I think the most symbolic thing I did, gosh, I'm going to cry, and I didn't even mean to. I think the most symbolic thing I did was was it September? I think it was September 2013. I was 2014. I was singing at the funeral of a little girl of somebody that I had grown up with, and he had asked if I would sing at her funeral. And it was just such a monumental experience because they let go of balloons mm-hmm. for her at the cemetery. And I think that I never met his daughter, but she would have been the same age that Ava would have been. Mm-hmm. And so I let go of a balloon too, because I thought this is symbolic, not just for this person that I had known my entire life, and we were pretty close mm-hmm. when we were in high school, but also for Ava. Mm-hmm. And so you have to do something mm-hmm. symbolic to mm-hmm. kind of release that.
Right. And I want to thank both of you guys for sharing your stories. I know we're all kind of emotional here in the room, and I think there's such power in sharing the stories because women are silenced mm-hmm. about yes. it. And one of the things we really want to touch on today is some ideas of what to do to help a friend that is right. going through this time in her life. And I know there's a couple of things that you wrote mm-hmm. down, Joette. And if you want to start with the first one.
I've got a couple of what not to do. Don't tell them that they'll get over it, mm-hmm. especially because they didn't take the baby home.
Right.
I was told, well, you never had him in your home, so it shouldn't be as hard as if you had had him home. You're a mommy as soon as you know that baby is existing. Mm-hmm. And probably one of the hardest things for me was my body had given birth to a baby, and yet I had nothing to mother. Mm-hmm. And that was really difficult. You know, there just all kinds of things that went crazy that you'd know that there was something odd, but you weren't sure why. Well, you know, you wanted that baby there mm-hmm. and it wasn't there. And so don't tell them they're going to get over it. They will in time, but they don't need to hear that mm-hmm. initially.
Right.
The second thing is don't offer to come and take the nursery down. We had, you know.
Oh, wow. I never even thought of something like that.
That's kind of.
For most of you, especially when you're in that third trimester, mm-hmm. you have the nursery set up. Mm-hmm. And we were told that. We're going to come and take everything down. And I remember at the time it didn't work out, the timing. And afterwards, though, it was the best thing because I remember walking into the room and just falling apart mm-hmm. and playing the mobile and just crying and crying, and both of us standing there and just crying and crying and crying. And then as we took everything down, packed up all the clothes and put everything away, that was therapy for us.
Right,
that
absolutely.
Was saying goodbye in our way. And it was something just the two of us had to do mm-hmm. together. It wasn't something somebody else could do with us.
Yeah.
If you are a single mama going through that, then you do need a close friend, a family member, your mom, your sister, somebody that feels the same hurt that you feel and can help you through that.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, love on them. Give them lots of hugs. Be there physically, even if there's no conversation. Just sit by them. They need your presence. Years later, we had friends whose two-year-old died of SIDS. And her parents wintered in the South. And so there was a four-day period of between when the little girl died until her grandparents could get back to North Dakota. And I remember that first morning calling a friend of mine and saying, I need to be at this house. And she said, bring the kids over. Don't even worry about it. And whatever you need, you just drop the kids off. And so from that on until after the funeral, I was there every morning at about 7, 8 o'clock. And it wasn't anything like I was such a good person to do this, but I knew what she needed.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that they needed to have somebody there that took the phone calls because they couldn't talk. I knew that they needed mm-hmm. somebody there to take care of the food that was coming in. We even got to the point where it was time for them to decide what clothes to put on their little girl. And they just were standing in the bedroom, in the closet, just not knowing where to start.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was things like, well, what's her favorite dress? And what's, you know, this? And then the mom was like, but what about her socks and her shoes? You know, it was all mm-hmm. these things that we worked through. And those were things that sometimes I would just see her sitting all by herself. People come and go. And I would just sit by her and just hold her hand. We didn't mm-hmm. do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so important for her to have that physical presence.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, the husband and wife aren't always able to help each other. because they are both grieving. And so, you know, you need somebody else to step in.
Before you go to the fourth one, can you touch a little bit on, because you two, you and Mandy and Duet have a connection, because I know that's kind of been your calling ever since it happened to you to be there for other moms. And there's a beautiful story about what you and Madison did afterwards, because I wasn't in a place when Mandy lost the baby. I was just getting pregnant. And if you know my story, you know I get into depression right away. And my coping skills were not good when it came to Mandy and the miscarriage. And I completely dropped the ball. And thankfully, there were other women around. And I haven't dropped it since. Now I remember.
I don't even feel like you really did then, no, to be honest. No.
But
who needed to be there was there.
Right. And would you share some of that? What happened?
Well, Mandy will have to, you know, I'm older, so my memory isn't so great. But I do know that my daughter-in-law called and said, Mandy's having a hard time tonight. We need to go down there.
And we figured out the other night when we talked about this as a group that I've blocked out a lot of things. But I do remember sitting on my floor that night and I was just consumed by grief. It wasn't even... Yes. It wasn't even CF related. It was grief.
It was just.
And I remember sitting on my floor thinking, my husband was at work. And I was thinking, I can't be alone tonight. I just can't do it. And so I texted Madison and said, do you think you could come over? And so she came over and she brought Joette. And I was in my pink bathrobe just sobbing. And I don't even remember if we were sitting on the floor or if we were sitting on the couch. I think we sat both places, to be honest. But I think so. They just came in and they held me and they let me cry. And that's what I needed.
Right, right.
And I don't think I've wailed like that maybe ever. Maybe one other time, like around Mother's Day that year. But
there's a sound you make when you're
crying. It's a wounded animal sound.
Yes, And it was so therapeutic because I didn't even know what I needed. I just knew I needed to not be alone.
Because I think one of the worst things you can do is ask, what do you need?
Right.
Yeah, because we don't know.
You don't. They don't know. And everybody needs the same thing. They need somebody to come in and take the phone calls. They need somebody to organize the food. They need somebody to just be there. And so instead of saying, what do you need? Show up.
Show up.
Even if you don't know what that is or what to say.
And don't be afraid of the grief.
Right.
Don't be afraid to hold them and let them cry as long as it takes. I mean, there are no words that need to be said.
Right.
The other thing I would say is give them permission to feel. Because
it hurts. It's a wound.
I don't know that I've ever felt grief like that before. And it's, you can't tell them how to handle it. You can't tell them how long it's going to take, but you can give them permission to say it's okay. Feel it.
Absolutely.
Because we try not to. We try to move on. We try to stay busy. And I think we do that with any type of a traumatic life transition. But with grief, you have to feel it or it will just keep recircling until you deal with it. One of the things I wrote down, though, as well is, you know, we're talking a lot about this from a mommy's point of view. But I know that the daddies need permission and they need guidance as well. So what are some of the things that you gals could maybe give pointers on for the men?
One of the things I always tell the women is that they will grieve differently. Because like you guys have both said, you become a mom the second that you know are pregnant. Dads don't, that doesn't always happen right away. Like they go through the whole process of pregnancy with their wives, but it's different for fatherhood. And so sometimes when baby comes and it's not the way that you wanted it to be, they never really had that connection like that. And so they will grieve differently. Not that it's any less important of a relationship, but giving each other the permission to grieve the way that they need to grieve. And like you said, sometimes it has to be separate. And clearly it has to be together too, but that they, you will grieve differently. The mama will grieve differently than the dad will.
And I think to remember that if he's not showing the grief that you feel, don't think that as less than, because it's just as important to him. It's just shows up differently. I remember my husband saying, because I, you know, we were Christians, and I mean, this was such a shock. This rocked my world. You know, nothing bad had ever happened. And I remember saying, why us? Mm-hmm. Why we're good people, we're good Christians, we tithe, we go to church, we're helpful in the church, and blah, 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 blah. And I remember him turning and looking at me and saying, why not us? Mm-hmm. Why are, just because we're Christians, why do we think that we should not go through hard times? Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a crossroads. I don't know if he knows that, but that was a crossroads for me. I was heading in one direction with my grief where I just could not get past mm-hmm. it. And I remember stopping dead in my tracks and thinking, yeah, who do I think I am? Mm-hmm. And you draw on the Lord then. I mean, you yeah. really dig deep in your faith. Mm-hmm. And you realize that, you know, Jesus is there through the whole thing, mm-hmm. right. holding you up.
Right. I know for Nate, I can't say that he ever fully grieved in front of me. I mean, obviously it's different for him, but I know there have been moments since then where when it's those certain time of year that I just have to cry a little. And sometimes if he's home, and he'll notice it before I will, that this is why. And so he'll just hold me. And I know right away when it would first start happening, he would cry a little bit with me. But one of the things I found most interesting is we were sitting in a sermon one day at church. And the pastor didn't mean anything by it. I mean, people say things, they have no idea how other people in the audience are going to take it. But he kept saying something how if you were a parent, you would know. Like, you would get this. Mm-hmm. And I just remember on the way home, Nate was saying, you know, I really get sick of hearing people say stuff like that. Because they don't understand that they don't understand how those words can sometimes hurt people. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think for Nate that, I mean, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but from what I've noticed is that his grieving comes up more in irritation with how things are said or something like that. And that has to be okay, too, mm-hmm. because
right.
that's
absolutely. Right.
That's he's right. never going to be the one who just sits and cries.
Right. Mm-hmm. And anger is part of the grief process.
Yeah, it is.
And
it is.
Having those feelings. And mm-hmm. for men, it's really hard for them to get down to those really deep emotions of sadness mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. grief. And sometimes it will come out in anger mm-hmm. first yep. before they're even able to get to the point that mm-hmm. they have. And they need permission.
They do.
To
they do.
Grieve too. Because mm-hmm. sometimes people focus, if they, you know, it can go two different ways. Sometimes they focus only on mom mm-hmm. grieving. And right. it's not as important for the mm-hmm. dad to grieve. And that's mm-hmm. the wrong no. way to approach no. that too.
Yep.
But they don't look like they're grieving.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. they're the strong ones. They got to keep it all together.
Right.
And that's unfortunate because then society doesn't think they hurt.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And they do deeply.
Mm-hmm. So what would be your final advice?
Final one is let them talk about the baby. Mm. That baby was on their mind for the past 9 months. From the moment that they knew that baby existed, they had a future planned. Mm-hmm. They had a game plan going already, what their life was going to be like and everything. Mm-hmm. And that changed. And so they need to talk that out. One thing that I needed to do is I had a niece that was just 3 months old at the time. And I remember needing to hold her and how hard it was to hold her. But I needed to. I needed to have that snuggly little body against me and love on her. And I think she's probably a very special young lady in my life because I associate that with her.
A bond. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's a bond I have with her. So allowing them to reminisce and, you know, and I know I went through that where I was actually told, you know, it's been long enough. You need to da 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 da. And I remember feeling like I'd been slapped in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a desire. And to have the mother whose 16-year-old daughter died in the car accident, she was the one that I was able to, she would talk about her daughter, I would talk about us. And it was therapeutic for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
So any closing thoughts from either one of you on this topic?
If I were going to give just like a coaching tip for people going through these type of situations, I would say to start writing down and paying attention what times of year you begin to grieve.
Yes.
Yep.
So that you know, okay, these are the times of year coming. You're going to give yourself some grace.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't, I don't know if there's ever a time where it gets better.
No.
And right. where it hurts less. And right. that might vary from person to person.
It's going to be 35 years in November. Mm-hmm. And every November, mm-hmm. as it's approaching Matthew's birthday, I can feel myself kind of getting mm-hmm. a little tense.
Yep.
It doesn't last as long now anymore, but mm-hmm. it's you can't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop that. So yeah, that's
so pay attention to those dates and yeah. just and if it's something where you need to sit and talk with your inner circle of people mm-hmm. and let them know, tell them, be mm-hmm. vulnerable with them mm-hmm. and let them know, look, these are the dates mm-hmm. that I tend to struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
Please just keep that in mind and remind me, because sometimes I'm not even aware of it
right.
until it's like a month later and I'm like, oh, that's what has been right. my problem.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
And isn't there an event where they meet up at the Capitol or something where they let
there is an infant balloons thing, and I don't remember go. What time mm-hmm. of the year
yeah.
it is.
Every time I hear it, I think, gosh, that would be something mm-hmm. to, because to find others that have experienced the same thing, you have an instant connection.
You do. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You just... You know how that other person feels.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely.
And so I want to thank Mandy and DeWitt for sharing their stories. And I know there are some of you listening to this that are right in the thick of what they've been talking about. And if this is you, we do encourage you to contact us, because DeWitt does deal a lot with women who are walking through this. And we would love to walk beside you as you're mm-hmm. walking through this path. And we want to thank you for listening. We know this was not always one of our fun topics, but it's an important one. And we want to give voice to those mamas who might not have one right now. And we do want to invite you to the website. You can find all the information about each one of our coaches and our coaching programs. There's a ton of free resources. But we really just want to thank you for listening. We want mm-hmm. to thank you for being a part of our community. And we look forward to chatting with you again next week on the Big Blue Couch, where life happens.